You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and it's 3/23/21. Well, you might have an impression in your mind of a mobile home park being a less than desirable place, and much of what you think you know about them is probably wrong. And in fact, they're an excellent investment. They have unbelievable cash flow, and you just have to pick the right one to invest in. And right now, well, there's a big chase going on. There's actually a shortage of mobile home parks for investment. They've become very popular. Brian Spear is with us now from Sunrise Capital Investors. Brian, it's great to have you on the show. So the stereotype that most people have of mobile home parks, where there's serial killers and drug addicts and alcoholics, meth heads, all these things, this is a stereotype that needs to be changed, doesn't it?
Well, I tell you what, that is one of those things that's kind of been hushed under the rug for years and years. Nobody really used to brag about owning trailer parks around the water cooler at the workplace. But things are changing, right? The last handful of years, a lot of private equities come into the space, and the secret is out, as it were. To your point, mobile home parks have a reputation of being cash cows. They've done exceptionally well for years and years. And while the majority of folks may have been overlooking this asset class for decades, big institutional players are finally starting to come into the space and see the merits of the asset class. So we love them. I mean, more the merrier. If folks are continuing to overlook them, we'll just continue to buy them up, and our investors will enjoy the fruits of our labor. So in any event.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you think about what people think they know about things, and then they really don't know about them. What's your average park resident? What is that person like?
Great question. And the stigma definitely does persist. I want to categorize it in three different ways, right? When I talk to folks for the very first time that know nothing about mobile home parks, I always try to explain it like this. Mobile home parks are rated in a star rating system from 1 to 5 stars, with 1 stars being trailer parks. That's the old, you know, drug, sex, rock and roll type of trailer park that we're talking about here, with the stereotypes of all the negativity that you see on the internet and in movies and things of that nature. On the other side of the spectrum, you have the 5-star manufactured housing communities. These are beautiful lifestyle communities, lifestyle choice, where retirees that are moving down from the colder weather climates, they're snowbirds moving down to Florida, they might spend $150,000, $200,000 on a manufactured home where they're truly choosing to live there, where there's golf carts driving around in the area, things of that nature. We prefer to provide the supply of affordable housing in a mobile home park from the 2 to 4 star rating. So we do our best to just do the blocking and tackling of just truly affordable housing here in this country. And that's the easiest way I could try to break it down. We steer clear of the trailer parks because those definitely do exist. We also steer clear of the lifestyle choice. It's more ritzy. It's extremely nice. We like the blocking and tackling of truly affordable housing from our perspective. It's really high quality, long-term economics, right? Massive demand for affordable housing in this country. There's an affordable housing crisis. There's a supply, a constraint of mobile home parks throughout the country. And we try to serve in that middle ground of 2 to 4 star communities.
Aha. So there's different tiers, I guess. It's not just all the dregs of society that have decided to congregate in one place. And you just picture like cops and ambulances nonstop going in and out of the park. But what you're talking about is completely different.
Correct. I mean, we've got some, the goal is really just to provide clean, quiet, safe, affordable housing for the vast majority of folks throughout the country. Statistics will show that there really isn't much more crime committed in a mobile home park than in a typical subdivision in a rural environment. It's just this the stigma permeates throughout society, irrespective of what the data actually shows. So the folks that reside in our communities are just hardworking blue collar folks looking to find a very reasonable home for 1,100 square feet for their kids. Oftentimes we'll have, you know, single parents that are coming out of unfortunate family circumstances that get divorced, that are down on their luck, that might be able to just buy a home for a period of time until they can get back up on their feet and move into something a little bit more structurally sound, if you will, in a stick-built home. So
they're really looking at this as it's kind of like a minimum wage job. Most of the people that take on minimum wage jobs are climbing the ladder of the middle class. There are people that are just stuck with them. They can't do any better. But most people use it as a stepping stone, and that's what they use the mobile home park for as well.
Yep. Everybody's situation is a little bit different, but we provide many folks with their sometimes only opportunity to live the American dream of home ownership. It's the easiest way, and unsubsidized way to actually get in and actually own your own home. And once folks actually own their own home inside of a mobile home park, there truly is no more reasonable living cost than a mobile home in this country. I mean, we've got some of the communities throughout our country, throughout our portfolio, that have lot rents of just a couple $100s. I mean, where in a civilized society, in a first world country, can you live on a monthly basis for just a couple $100s per month? And we're talking about, again, a three bedroom, two bath, 1,200-1,300 square foot home where you can really have an entire family reside comfortably for just a couple $100s. So it's a great value from their perspective. And from our perspective, it's extremely appealing because once we can turn them into a true homeowner where they don't have a home payment or a mortgage payment on their home and they're only paying the lot rent, then they become unbelievably sticky because when they're paying $200 per month, there's literally nowhere else they can go to have a more affordable place to live. And when it's, again, $200 a month for lot rent and we're able to increase lot rents a mere $20, nominally, that's not a huge dollar amount on a monthly basis. But from a percentage increase, it's quite substantive, right? You're increasing the NOI at 10% every time you do something like that. So from an investment perspective, it's again, a very mutually beneficial type of structure where the resident does well, gets a good bang for their buck, and we are able to do well in the same vein and get a nice return on our investment.
And what kind of returns can you realize on these types of investments, Brian?
Yeah, a great question. And we'll talk about both levered and unlevered returns. Over the last handful of years, cap rates have compressed significantly across a lot of different areas of real estate. But in the manufactured housing sector specifically, they've come down. And there's a broad range. Again, we talk about 1 to 5 star communities. So in the same manner, you know, they trade differently depending upon the quality. On the very high side, A grade type of communities, those manufactured home communities that are beautiful lifestyle choice, those are typically trading in an unlevered 5 cap, something in that range. And the 2-star, 1-star communities, they'll go all the way up to double digit cap rates still, even in today's environment where obviously Fed fund rates extremely low, interest rates are extremely low, and you could still get really nice affordable housing communities for knocking on the door of double-digit cap rates on a case-by-case basis. When you talk about the blocking and tackling middle of the road, most of that stuff is trading in the 6.5-7 cap unlevered, but you still get a really, really nice spread when interest rates are coming in at 4.5%, if you will. We're still able to get a nice margin, 200-300 basis point spread between the interest rates we're paying and the cap rates we're acquiring these deals at today.
All right, I got a question for you. As far as best locations for these parks, mobile home parks, where are they? Are they up north, south, or any place?
Great question. And, you know, it's tough to answer this one. Truly, from our perspective, we always follow Zamzell's perspective. We don't buy markets. We buy deals. We do our best to go find deals that are off market, direct to owner, that provide high quality returns. But if I'm going to be narrowing in on specific markets, a couple things I'd say. There's a large transition from the northeast to the southeast in terms of population. Folks are moving out of those colder climates. If you can go check out the data over the past decade and what it looks like moving forward, the Sun Belt is projected to do quite well. So we do like the Sun Belt area. In addition to that, historically, the Midwest has always done very, very well for mobile home parks. There's a lot of really just high quality blue collar workers that live there. Some of the coastal markets are a little bit more difficult from my perspective, from my taste. We prefer to own real estate in more landlord friendly environments. Oftentimes, California, New York, some of the coastal states will provide a little bit more onerous rent control and tenant friendly legislation. So we like to stay in kind of the Sun Belt and Midwest area, if you will.
All right. And so just curious, how long does the average resident live there?
Oh, man. Mobile home park residents are remarkably sticky. The most tenured resident that we've ever had in one of our communities has been there for over 40 years. We own a community in Maryland where one of the residents has lived there and rented their lot for over 40 years. It's just because they can't get a better deal than what we're able to provide them. But on average, once residents are own their own home outright, it's multiple years of residency. If you're in one of the environments where you own the homes yourself, there is more transient residence and more tenant turnover where they might stay for a year or two. But across the entirety of the portfolio, once the residents own the homes themselves, they're there for years and years and years. Just another one of the many, many things we love about the business model.
And how long have you been doing this for?
We started, I reached out to my business partner, Kevin Bupp, years ago. He started doing podcasting, the same thing you do, Carrie. He actually was on the podcast a while back. And I listened to him through his podcast and just loved what he had to say. And I at the time, was building piles of cash, wanted to turn them into streams of income. Reached out to him and said, "Hey, buddy, I got an offer you can't refuse. I'm going to come down to Florida. I'm going to work full time, 60, 70 hours a week. I'm going to bring hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I'm going to try to help you grow your business." I think in time we'll be able to build this thing up into something pretty substantive. At the time, he was doing one-off individual mobile home parks, some JV deals with friends and family. We've been able to now grow it to the point where we're actually rolling out larger funds to help high net worth accredited investors diversify into both mobile home parks and parking lots. Those are our two asset classes. So I've been doing that full time now for roughly 7 years, something like that. And just looking to continue to grow.
Hey, so it's interesting that that you've been in it for as long as you have. And really, what do you think the biggest thing you've learned from mobile home park investing during this time?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I think it is just a very unique niche in that you don't know what you don't know. You have to acquire every deal with a margin of safety, because in the crazy unique industry of mobile home parks, you never know until you actually get in there and you own the asset for a quarter or two and get some dirt under your fingernails and you're able to dig up all those skeletons in the closet. It takes a little bit of time because there's it's not similar to going in and acquiring triple net retail or massive 30-story office buildings or some of the more class A multifamily, higher grade institutional assets. These are generational assets built oftentimes in more secondary markets by farmers 30, 40, 50 years ago that have owned them for decades. And they're all unique. They truly all are are unique individual assets, and you've got to be comfortable with that little semblance of unknown when you're going to acquire the deal. And that's why when you're negotiating these, you need to make sure that you go in with a nice margin of safety, because, you know, Murphy's Law, what can go wrong will, and you got to have a nice margin of safety right at acquisition. And not until one or two quarters of ownership of the asset do you really truly understand how that thing is going to perform. But in any event, I hope that adds some light for those that are listening and interested in potentially jumping into the space.
All right. And of course, most communities don't want these things built there. I don't know how many new ones. There are probably as many new mobile home parks constructed as there are shopping malls. They're kind of on the outs, and most communities rise up in arms if somebody tries to build one there. So what about expansion? Is there any way to expand here?
Great point. And as you mentioned, there's really not a lot of new supply coming online in this space. There was a stat put out. There were roughly 10 mobile home parks constructed nationwide over the decade ending in 2016. And that hasn't materially changed over the past few years. There's just a couple of these built every year. And just as you're mentioning, it's the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. Local residents don't want a trailer park built next to their new subdivision. So you don't see a lot of these. And it's why we love, again, the long-term supply and demand economics of the space. Massive demand, not a lot of new supply coming online. You do have the ability now, with the asset class becoming a little bit more investment grade in the past handful of years, municipalities are more warm to adding additional lots onto pre-existing communities. So we are seeing an uptick there, but it's not materially going to change the supply of mobile home park lots throughout the country. It's a little bit easier to get past the regulators if you're just building on and doing a little bolt-on development to your pre-existing community. But as far as brand new construction, there's still not a ton of that going on here in the States.
So we're going to see a situation where people actually get priced out of mobile home parks?
That is interesting. I'm not sure. There is a lot of, from my perspective, while mobile home parks aren't perfectly inelastic in terms of their pricing power, they are very inelastic. As mentioned, moving lot rents from $200 to $220, I mean, $20 on a monthly basis, most folks are going to be able to find a way to make that happen, even in very, very modest income households. And there is a large margin between where the current lot rents are throughout this country to where they likely should be. Charles Becker, he's a professor at Duke University, put out some statistics here in the past decade, which conveys that mobile home park rents throughout the entire country are far, far lower than they should be, largely due to the fact that most of these have been owned and operated by mom and pop guys over the past handful of decades, and they haven't kept lot rents up with inflation. So it is very likely that in time, these assets will continue to have lot rents that increase at a higher rate than inflation. This is why all the institutional players have put out data conveying that mobile home parks have a higher same-store NOI growth over the next decade than any other asset class. So will folks get priced out? Potentially. But seeing as how we provide the last bastion of affordable housing that's unsubsidized here in this country, inevitably there will be some folks that are pushing hard to do their best to try to keep this as affordable as possible. So time will tell if there's some regulation that gets put forward to try to keep these as affordable as possible. I don't know what that would look like, again, years and years down the road, but there very, very well may be some folks that do end up getting to the point where rent increases inside of some of these communities are pushing more towards market, and they may need to move to a different location. I mean, as is the case with just supply and demand and economics in any respective area throughout the country, most folks wouldn't be able to live in Silicon Valley for thousands of dollars on a monthly basis if they're just blue collar folks that typically, you know, make 60-70 grand in a Midwestern city. They would not be able to survive in Silicon Valley. They'd have to go move somewhere else. Time will tell how that shakes out, but you see that same sort of dynamic throughout the entire country.
All right. And I find it interesting. Hey, what does your eviction record look like in these places?
We don't have too terribly many. We've been fortunate, even throughout the pandemic. We've had collection rates that have been quite solid. Mobile home parks have performed better than virtually every other asset class since the pandemic began. So we haven't had a substantive uptick. Knock on wood, I don't want to jinx ourselves here. We do have a handful that come. And usually, as mentioned, that is in those not in the resident-owned homes, but in the park-owned homes. When we own the homes themselves, that class of resident often is much more transient. It's easier for them to get behind because typically when they're renting a home, the payment might be $600-800 compared to when they own the home and then the lot rent's only $200-400. It's simple and easy to see that you would like to have folks ultimately become lot renters because the collection rates are extremely high. The residents are extremely sticky. The expense ratios in the communities are very low. Just a very, very solid business model once you can get there. It's been our experience that in any given community that we have, if we've got a handful of park-owned homes, we do our best to put them on lease option structures where they'll eventually become homeowners of that particular unit. But there's about usually a 50% default rate between when we put those folks on the lease option to when they actually get through fully and are able to own the home. So if we have 10 of them in a given community, on that first cycle, we might have five of them over the first handful of years make it through. Five of them fail. We'll then put the five back into another lease option. Two, three of them will actually succeed. The other two or three would fail. And this process just completes until we can get all of these over to a tenant-owned home type of structure.
Right. So you're giving them an actual pathway to becoming owners, not just lessees. During the pandemic, has any of the moratoriums in evictions affected you at all?
Again, we've been really fortunate that we haven't been materially impacted by the pandemic. As the pandemic just drags on month over month, we see just the subtle uptick of our delinquency. And with the new passage of this massive trillion-dollar package, I think it's something akin to $25 billion of rental assistance that's been pushed through in the various different states that we own assets. We've been working with the state regulators to find out where they're going to be allocating that capital. It's always done on a state-by-state basis. And we've been able to tap into that in a handful of states. Some of them are now just getting to the point where they're dispersing those funds or putting together the program that will allow us to tap into that and help those residents that are in dire need of getting some of that rental assistance. So we do our best to try to help folks get through tough times. It's part of the world of just being in residential housing. And then specifically in our little niche of affordable housing, we do our best to work with folks when they fall on hard times. And fingers crossed, the pandemic won't drag on too much longer. Right? We've gotten a pretty high, I think 30-something% of the country now has had at least their first dose. So fingers crossed by the end of this year, you know, we'll be back to a much more normal economy and this will be in the rear view and we'll be back in the swing of things.
All right. Well, that's all fascinating. And yeah, you should abandon your stereotypes. It ain't always the case. It's always what you think you know that gets you into trouble that isn't true, as Mark Twain said, and that's certainly the case here. Hey, if people want to find out more about how to invest in this interesting asset class, what is the best way to contact you or connect with you on the web?
Yeah, great question, Kerry, and much appreciated. Our firm is Sunrise Capital Investors, so you can head to investwithsunrise.com. There you can get access to our most recent offering and learn about both mobile home park investing and investing in parking lots, kind of what we've done historically. And feel free to reach out anytime. Happy to jump on the horn and talk shop about folks that are interested in learning more about these unique niches.
Excellent, excellent. And Nick, if you've got any questions for Brian about this, why don't you send us an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. We'll forward it off to him. Make sure you go over to our website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for a newsletter. Brian, total pleasure. Good luck and happy mobile home hunting there.
Yeah, very much appreciated, Kerry. Until next time, you be great, bud.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.